just how I was raised.
Liberty Lounge, brought to you every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. Listen to classic country music in the Liberty Lounge to help you end your week on a pleasant note. We'll have sad songs.
I go out walking after midnight.
Happy songs.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
Patriotic songs. Songs of tragedy.
Two little boys and an old family dog. By the banks of a stream sat one day.
Love songs.
Welcome to my world.
And good old honky-tonk music.
I'm a honky-tonk man, and I can't seem to stop.
So join me every Friday night and just let your hair down for a couple of hours here on Liberty Lounge. And it's time for the shooting bench. If political incorrectness offends you, or if you don't like guns, or if you don't believe our government is corrupt enough to compare to 1938 Nazi Germany, this may not be the show for you, because for the next 2 hours, that's all we're going to talk about. You need to understand that there's a storm coming. You need to understand that the storm is building strength. And most of all, you need to understand that
we are the storm.
Thank you.
All right, looks like we're going now. All right, let's start this all over again. And I don't know what happened, but evidently it's been fixed. So, it's the 31st of October. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. This is Amy's most favoritest holiday in the whole world, I think, is Halloween. And she couldn't make it in tonight. And as I said, I think the time changes here in about a week. What is it, 7th or 8th of November, I think it changes. So with that change is going to be a change to our times and our schedule. I haven't got with DeTinker yet to see what's going to work. I'm not sure. Monday nights is not working for Amy. Getting done at 11 o'clock at night's not going to work for me. So I'm not sure what we're going to do, but something is going to change. And, all right, thank you, Anonymous. Yeah, time changes next Sunday, so. Not sure what's going to change. We're not getting the donations at all that we'd hoped for, so we're gonna probably cut back here quite a bit. We may go down to 1 hour three times a week, or 1 hour Monday and Wednesday. Liberty Lounge is not going to change. If that's all I ever do, Liberty Lounge is not going to change. So we may run it an hour earlier so I can get done quicker on Fridays. We may let Amy take my first hour that I've been using on Fridays and keep Liberty Lounge where it's at. I may run 1 hour Monday, Wednesday, and do Liberty Lounge the same. I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do, but there's going to be a change. And I don't know what else we can do for fundraising, Doc. We've got our little button up there. That's it ought to work. I don't know. Maybe I should donate or auction off some a lock of hair or something. Maybe that would work. I'll cut a little. Well, hell no, I can't do that. I don't have enough hair left to do that. So that's not going to work. Let's see here. I'll think of something. Don't know what it is. We'll try it. All right. We had a class up in Edgewood this weekend up there, for those of you that were listening to Liberty Lounge Friday. Edge of the Woods joined us there, and we had one of our students had dropped by and visited there for a little while. Hey, Snowman, glad you joined us. And had a good class, a lot of fun. And it was had a couple people not show up, so it wasn't as big as we'd hoped for, but that worked out pretty well. It was a well, somebody's damn glad to see Snowman there, I can tell you that for sure. But the weather was nice. We had no rain, very little wind. Had a little bit of wind on the second day, but everything went through pretty well. And we're planning on probably trying to go back up there in that same part of the country again, probably, hopefully late November, maybe early December, and before winter gets too hard up there. We've also got a class coming up the 19th of November. It's one of our community emergency response preparedness training classes. It's going to be up in Snowflake on the 19th. And I got to get busy and get some other classes going here through the winter. We're probably going to try to put on quite a few more indoor classes, more of the preparedness stuff, Glock armor classes, field armor classes, maybe reloading. I don't know if we'll get into reloading or not. And Doc, you know, I appreciate it, but no. But thanks. Mountain Shooter. Edge was in Edgewood. That's right. That's where he's from. That's where his name comes from, is Edge of the Woods. So the we had a really good time. He had to leave us a little early Friday. He was reloading some shells so he could go out
and participate in some of the class on Saturday, and then he was not able to. Some personal issues came up that got in the way, and he was not able to make it. But it was a good class, nevertheless. Okay, let's move on here. We've got things to do, places to go, and people to see here. Bring my crystal ball. You know, this came up back in, or the version that I have, anyway, come up about a year ago. And it's the 10 most dangerous towns in Arizona to live in. And would you believe, out of the 10 most dangerous towns, Phoenix is not one of them. Which kind of surprised me. We had Tucson made it twice. Actually, there's a South Tucson that's only 5,600 people. No surprise about that. And then Tucson itself both made it. But that's good, Doc. That's, for those of you not in the chat room, Doc said he went to his first USPSA pistol match last month. Had the slowest time, the second most accurate score. You know, accuracy is what wins it. You know, that's what wins the fight. Speed is important, but no matter, you can't miss fast enough to win a gunfight. Yay for last place. For those of you that are familiar with Arizona and the towns and stuff, let me just go down through these here real quick. Coolidge, number 10. These are the 10 most dangerous towns in Arizona. Coolidge is down there south and a little east of Phoenix, not too far from Florence, where state prison is down there. Glendale, not too far down in the valley, down in the Phoenix area. Number 9, population 234,000. Coolidge, population 11,820. Eighth, believe it or not, Sholo, Arizona, with a population of 10,732, is the eighth most dangerous city in the state of Arizona. 702 crimes were reported overall to authorities here in 2013, which means that 65 crimes were reported for every 1,000 students here. Students, residents, jeez. Next one is Page. Page surprises me a little bit. Page is kind of a small town, 7,300 people, right up on the Utah border, up at Glen Canyon Dam. 526 crimes reported in Page, this was in 2013, which is, now I don't know how often they do this, but this is the most current one. This just came out in August of 2015. So 71 crimes for every 1,000 residents. About 75% of the cases were theft. So that kind of indicates maybe a impoverished area there. Tucson. 500,000 people, 37,955 crimes reported in 2013, and 3,472 on the list were violent crimes, murder, manslaughter, rape, robbery, and assault. This comes at 72 crimes for every 1,000 residents. That's quite a jump there, 526 crimes for Page, which is a seventh most dangerous town. You know, I'm not sure that I give much credence to this study here, because it just says crimes. It doesn't say violent crimes. Crimes don't necessarily make a town dangerous. You know, it says right here that 75% of the cases in Page were theft, so that doesn't necessarily mean that people were going to die if somebody caught them stealing their stuff or something. So I think this should be, if we're talking about danger, we should probably limit it to murder, manslaughter, rape, and assault, and not worry about the robbery, unless it's armed robbery, I guess would be okay to add in there. Number five, big town of Wilcox, 3,678 people. Wilcox has the lowest population and total reported crimes on this list, but the crime to resident ratio is pretty high. 74 crimes for every 1,000 residents, most of which were larceny. See there? Larceny, unless it's armed robbery, larceny in and of itself, I don't really think needs to be reported here for danger. Globe was the next one, again, with 565 crimes, but with a population of 7,414 people. 565 crimes reported, 77 cases of violent crimes, 488 cases of property crimes. So why is that so dangerous? Because of property crimes. Comes to an estimate of 76 crimes reported for every 1,000 people. Holbrook, doesn't surprise me too much, impoverished. We shan't say. We'll just leave that alone. But population 4,988 people. Holbrook, 411 crimes reported there in 2013. 43 cases of aggravated assault, 6 cases of robbery, 237 cases of theft, 2 cases of arson. This means there were 82 crimes for every 1,000 residents. At least there weren't any rapes and murders reported that year. So Holbrook doesn't seem to be that dangerous. You're just not going to keep all your stuff for very long. Tolleson, second on the list. But you're far more likely to be a victim of property crime than violent crime, 105 crimes reported for every 1,000 people. And that seems to be the case with all of these. Property crime seems to be much higher than any of the rest of them. South Tucson. Now this is more what I would expect here. So South Tucson is not exactly where we probably want to move to. 150 violent crimes, 849 property crimes means 175 crimes reported for every 1,000 residents. So you got a little more than a 1 in 6 chance there of being a victim. That's a heck of a jump up from Tolleson, 175 crimes. So kind of interesting. Radio Doc, I don't know. We're talking about just the violent crimes in Arizona. I'm not sure exactly where Albuquerque would rate, but I'm sure it's fairly high, especially if you count mostly just down there on Central, down in that area. Let's see here. Let's check that out. In Albuquerque, this is going to be interesting. Here you go, Radio Doc, for all you New Mexico folks there. This came out not too long before the one that we just read. New Mexico ranks second in the nation for violent crime. Second highest violent crime rate in the country in 2013, the violent crime rate in the land of enchantment, the land of entrapment, was more than 4 times the rate in Vermont, which was the country's least violent state. So let's go down through here and pick out some individual towns here. I don't want to go through the whole story. Albuquerque. Haven't received any phone calls or emails questioning the safety of New Mexico. Albuquerque mayor said the city surveys show the vast majority of residents feel safe during the day and at night. Maybe residents might, but I don't feel safe in Albuquerque at night. And he said he doesn't think the city has missed out on economic development opportunities because of its violent reputation. Well, I'm sure there's numbers here. Violent crime rate in New Mexico is 597 per 100,000 residents. So there's no way to compare that with the study that we just talked about, because it was just crimes, period. And New Mexico is using violent crimes here, which makes a lot more sense to me. In Albuquerque, the rate was 774 per 100,000, which is more than twice the national average of 368 violent crimes per 100,000 residents. According to the FBI's reports, Gallup, had the state's highest violent crime rate in 2013 with 2,086 per 100,000 people. Violent crimes counted in the data are rape, murder, non-negligent homicide, robbery, and aggravated assault. That makes more sense. There were 125 murders in New Mexico in 2013, 37 of those in Albuquerque, which was near a record low. That was down from 41 in 2012 and 56 in 2009. Albuquerque has had as many as 70 murders in a year. Well, Tebow, it doesn't say anything about Farmington here, so I don't know where it stands here with all the rest of them. But that's kind of interesting. And New Mexico, Tebow said New Mexico may be rated now at number one for the most violent city around, or violent state in the country. So that's not good. Tebow, you're always welcome to come to Arizona if you want. Lots of stuff going down here, always. Why am I getting all of this stuff here all of a sudden? Okay, I'll check on that in a minute. All right, let's see. Before we get too carried away here, let's listen to Dave Dudley for a minute.
He said, "Pardon me for being so bold. You got a cigarette that's already rolled. I gave him one and he lit it in his own good time. The smoke in that pool room hung like fog. When he talked, he sounded like a growling dog. He said, do you care for a dollar on the 5 and 9? Now the man was ugly and his eyes were mean. His clothes were dirty, but his hands were clean. He held that stick like the mother holds the hand of a child. Well, I've been known to hustle a few. When the waitress said, is he playing you? And I said, yeah, bring me brandy. What a buy. A little Red Parker, he was way in the back, taking quarters and handling racks. And I told him, Red, come up here. Glue him up tight. That brandy had me feeling warm. So I tipped that waitress and checked her form. And I said, honey, you like a winner, and she just smiled. I played like a man with a broken wrist. I won 2 and he won 6. And I had him set up, so I said, let's play for 5. By this time a crowd had gathered round just to see this fish and watch him drown. I told that waitress, more brandy, water by. Well, he went out and got a custom cue, and he said, no offense to you, I don't play off the wall with nobody but friends. It had gold initials and a leather grip, pearl and silver inlaid tip. He smiled at me and said, why don't we play for 10? Well, I've never seen a man that walked who made those balls and table talk. They're speaking English. He sure didn't need my help. He broke the balls and kept that string for $187 in the ring, till I gave up and said, friend, you're gonna have to play by yourself. Well, he sacked it up and he walked outside. I strolled out just to watch him ride. There's a blind that caddy built like the rest of that car. The boys in the pool room, they had him a laugh, and I hung it up, let it pass. Didn't have a thing but my elbows to put on that bar. The waitress smiled, said, water by. I took the charity and I thanked her twice, and sitting there sipping, and I said they had me a thought. Unlucky gambler and lucky in love, I guess you know what I was thinking of. I said, waitress, honey, what time do you get off? What about our freedom and this piece of ground? We didn't get to keep them by backing down. They say we don't realize the mess we're getting in. Before you start your preaching, let me ask you this, my friend. Have you forgotten how it felt that day?
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
All right, we're back. Let me get my crystal ball opened up here again. You guys, I always try to include everybody, include the listeners in the decisions we make. I know we've bounced around a little bit. Things have changed with Southwest Shooting Authority and, you know, where we live and what we do and all this stuff. And it used to be that it was beneficial to have a show 5 nights a week, and it worked out, and people were probably maybe a little better off all over the country. I don't know. It seemed that we had a lot more donations coming in, with helped us to be able to do what we did, and that doesn't seem to be the case now. So let us know what we're not having. We don't have a whole lot of options. I don't want to go any less than what we're going right now, if I can help it, or any less days. Let me put it that way. The chat room, you know, we're getting a lot of listeners on podcast, on iTunes and Podbean, but the chat room seems to be going down a little bit. So I'm not sure what's going on there. I don't know if having it a little earlier would help, which, you know, we may do when the time changes here. So, not sure what exactly we want to do. I'd like to get some feedback from you guys. You can either email me at theshootingbench@live.com, theshootingbench@live.com, or you can mention it here on the chat room, and I might be able to catch it. Or, that's pretty much your two options. For those of you that are Facebookers, you could go to the Shooting Bench has its own page under that name, under the Shooting Bench. You can go and put some ideas there if you want. And so we'll, with your suggestions and everything, we'll try to decide how we want to do it. I can tell you that Monday night is not going to work for Amy. It's just not working at all for her. If you notice, she's missed quite a few times. It's just because she has so damn many things going on, and so many people depend on her to for help and everything. It's just not working. So, not sure what she's going to do. We might do, might let her have the hour that I have been taking for the Shooting Bench on Friday before Liberty Lounge, and I'll just go right into Liberty Lounge. If I've got any real important news, I'll just throw it in during Liberty Lounge. So when the time changes for you guys, since it doesn't change for us, the Shooting Bench will come on at 9 o'clock our time, Mountain Time. I'll be on the same time zone, same time then as New Mexico and Utah and Colorado and the rest of the mountain states. So we might do, since it'll be starting at 9, I may just go from 9 to 10, which would be 8 to 9 Pacific. And what, 11 to 12, 11 to midnight Eastern. So we might see how that works. That would make Amy come on when? That'd make Amy come on 8 o'clock Mountain Time, 7 Pacific. That would be the same time as we were doing previously. So she comes on at 7 to 8, and then I'll go from 8 to 10 on Friday. That's an option. Because I don't want to, I am not going to change anybody else's schedule. You know, Mother Earth and the Tinker and Doc when he happens along, and who else we got? Concretin. You know, anybody else, anybody that's got a regular schedule, we're going to keep it that way. I'm not changing theirs to change ours. So we'll see what happens. So if you got any ideas, we'll throw them in the chat room or email me about it, and we'll see what happens. All right. Let me rub my crystal ball. That's interesting. Okay, we'll save that for a minute. See what else we got here. Stand by. We got stuff coming in as we sprecken. Well, let's see how shotguns stack up against handguns in a robbery. Man who attempted to rob three people at gunpoint outside an apartment in Florida. Well, he is now amongst the deceased after he was shot by one of his would-be victims. It said the three victims told police they were barbecuing outside. You know, I'm seeing quite a few of these of people just minding their own business. They're at the store. They're doing something in their backyard. They're doing nothing. They're not in a place where they should be running into problems, but they're running into problems. And the good thing about that is more often than not now, people are armed and they take care of it themselves, which is what happened in this case. This guy come in and came up to him, aimed a gun at him, and demanded all their valuables. Well, the guy apparently had his handgun aimed at one of the victim's head while he went through the pockets of the second victim, but he was distracted, taking what didn't belong to him, and the third victim, who was standing nearby there, was able to grab a shotgun from the bed of his truck, fired two shots, and that was it. Lights out. They called police. They arrived in about 15 minutes. And found out there was really no reason to hurry. So, you know, it's unfortunate. I always say I love stories with happy endings. It's always unfortunate when somebody dies. I guess what it is, it's unfortunate when people choose this vocation. Here is when they start stealing from people. So it's unfortunate. I know as sorry as he probably was, he probably still had siblings, maybe mom and daddy, probably, you know, there's probably a people around there that cared for him, and it was unfortunate that he chose the lifestyle that he did. But, oh well, I don't know what to tell him. One of those things, I reckon. You know, as much as we like to think that Mel Gibson has been pro-gun, that's not exactly the case. You know, after he had his little meltdown here a while back and his drunk and belligerent deal that he pulled off here a couple of years ago. Well, it's been more than a couple of years ago. When was that? Probably 2005 or 6 or somewhere in there. Well, there's a... new movie coming out now. He's the director of it. It's called Hacksaw Ridge. And it's based on a true story. Well, let me tell you about the movie, and then I'll tell you about the other deal. There's a guy named Desmond T. Doss, was U.S. Army corporal that got the Congressional Medal of Honor, even after refusing to bear arms during World War II. But it says that he has documented as saving 75 men at the Battle of Okinawa without firing a single shot. So Gibson, I guess, is going to, I guess this movie's coming out opening nationwide on November 4th. But going back to the reason for the story here, it says that something has to be done about the heinous gun violence out there. Now, he's always been fairly pro-gun, but apparently all this drinking, I guess, has altered his brain or something. I don't know what happened. He said, I understand where it comes from, the right to bear arms because of the revolution and that stuff and tyranny and the right to defend yourself, and I still agree with that. But it's kind of out of balance at the moment. Something has to be done in order to stop some of the heinous violence that has occurred. He says, it's going to take somebody smarter than me to figure out. He said he don't know what to do about it. I still don't see why these people think that it just completely Twitterpates me. How come these people think that more control and more regulation and everything is going to somehow make things better? I don't get it. And it's been proven time and time and time and time again that cities and states that have the more the more liberal gun control law, which is right. It's just when you say liberal, people think the wrong direction. But anyway, the less strict gun laws have the lowest crime rates. And I don't understand why these people get it. Why don't they just wake up one morning and say, well, crap, it looks like we've been wrong this whole time. See, look at Wyoming. Look at Arizona. You know, look at New Mexico. You've got the most violent state in the country, but most of that, or second most violent, or whatever it is, but most of that comes from Albuquerque and the surrounding area. So I don't think it's a matter of state laws. It's a matter of what goes on in big cities. But anyway, let me see what's going on up here. Survival Circle. Coat Pendle's Voscast part. Okay. All right. Hey, Radio Doc, I'm still looking here if I can, and I don't know if I'll be able to fit it in before the end of the year, but I'm still looking at trying to do a class up in your part of the country, but I just don't see how we can fit it in before the end of the year. We're going to give it a shot, if at all possible, but it's looking pretty slim here. Let's see. We'll save that for Wednesday. Here is a great story. I really enjoyed this story. I was going to save it for Amy, but Amy's having a hard time making it in here right now. This is cooler than hell. It cracks me up that this is definitely one of those stories with a happy ending. This guy just died, a World War II fighter pilot, died at the age of 94. Flew over 50 missions before he was shot down and became a prisoner of war. However, and this is the part I love about this, he made a daring escape to the Netherlands after stealing a German fighter plane while he was a prisoner of war. Now, I'd really like to see that movie. And then, like, see just how he pulled that off. But he lived in Palos Verdes Estates in California at the time of his death, well known for his high-flying skills and was one of the top testing pilots of the 50s and 60s. He was once described as the greatest stick-and-rudder man that ever lived by Jimmy Doolittle. Jimmy Doolittle, you might remember, was the guy that led the raid on Japan in 1942. He's getting all rave reviews here from everybody. I'd really like to hear more about that story of him stealing the German fighter plane while he was a prisoner of war. Buzz Aldrin said, we've lost an aviation pioneer today. He could do magical things with an airplane. He was the best. Neat story, huh? another story here about lots of these coming out lately. I'm just picking a few of them, but there's been every day, there's been two or three, four, maybe five stories about homeowners that are choosing not to be victims. There's another one just came out three or four days ago. Spokane Valley. Spokane Valley came up in the news here, a month ago as a Second Amendment sanctuary city. Well, something kind of different came up here. 42-year-old man is dead now after he charged a homeowner. He didn't choose his victim very well. The homeowner was an Army veteran, served in Iraq, armed himself when he heard someone knocking on his front door about 8:30 in the evening. When he opened the door, there was nobody there, but then he looked a little closer. The guy saw somebody standing in the dark in his yard. The homeowner told him to leave, but he refused to leave. However, instead of leaving, he decided to charge the homeowner, so he was running towards him instead of running away. And veteran fired one shot. Homeowner was unsure at that point if he had struck him or not. When deputies arrived at the scene a little while later, they found the guy hiding in the man's backyard near the porch. He appeared to have been shot in the leg, but initially refused to cooperate, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, the bullet had pierced his femoral artery, and he was losing a large amount of blood. Okay, well, problem with all that is he was uncooperative. At one point, he lost consciousness, and despite efforts to save him, he died on the scene. So, another story with a happy ending there. And again, I probably shouldn't say that. It sounds like this guy may have had some mental issues or something. There's no telling what kind of problems some of these people have. And it's probably unfair to say, sometimes they make choices that they wouldn't have made normally, and it's just an unfortunate deal. Oh, well. It's about all we can say about that. I'll probably save this one till we'll have another break here in a little bit. I might save that one till a little bit later. Now this one is a happy ending here. This was another one that have a happy ending. I mean, this one really is a happy ending. 20-year-old self-described professional prankster. Well, I tell Amy every time this stuff comes on TV or every time we see one on YouTube or something about these pranks people pull. And some of them, I said, wow, it's a damn good thing they didn't do that in Arizona or Wyoming or Idaho or Washington, or at least eastern Washington. because there's been some of them that were pretty damn bad, and I can promise you that I would have shot somebody if I would have been involved in that. Some of you might remember the story we did here about, hell, I don't even know when it was, 4 or 5 years ago, about this retard down in Phoenix that had a replica facsimile type RPG rocket launcher down in Phoenix. He was dressed up in sheets and had a towel wrapped around his head, and for all the world he looked just like an Arab or something out there, and was out in the middle of a busy intersection with this rocket launcher. Now, he was trying to prove a point, and it escapes me now. I don't remember what the point he was trying to pull. I don't remember if it was a school deal or what he was trying to do. But on the one hand, I can say he should thank his lucky stars that that certain people weren't there when this happened. He probably didn't deserve to die for whatever he was doing. But on the other hand, it really surprises me that all those people driving around in the car, that somebody didn't run his ass over. I would have run his ass over. It looked, you know, the weapon that he had, the facsimile of the weapon, it looked pretty real. And I'm not sure that I would have taken the time to figure out and ask him, "Hey, dude, is that a real RPG you got there?" And wait for him to pull the trigger. You know, and I fear that I may have, and I'd have probably regretted it when I found out that it was just some college kid acting like an idiot. But I'm afraid that I would have either run him over or shot him, one or the other. And I'm surprised that nobody tried to run him over, nobody tried to shoot him, nobody tried to jump out and subdue him. He was just out there in the middle of people just driving around him and let him go. So I was a little surprised about that. But anyway, that's one of several things that I've seen over the last several years here about these pranksters, where they go out and do stupid stuff and scare people to death, and the people scream and run off. One of these days, well, it happened on the 27th of October. This guy's 20-year-old from Stockton, California. He's decided that he's going to go ahead and hang up his clown costume and his act here after he was knocked in the head with a handgun by one of his prank targets that didn't find him all that amusing. The guy, and believe it or not, I assume he's a Muslim. His last name is Mohammed. But he has a cameraman that films all these pranks, and then he presents the clips to nearly 7 million Instagram followers under the name Hood Clips. Well, Mohammed, this week, or last week, thought he'd get in on this creepy clown thing that's been going on, scaring employees at a Taco Bell drive-in. Creeping out a kid playing basketball who accidentally threw the ball at him. But when he jumped out of some bushes wearing his clown makeup, Muhammad was the one that got the surprise here. The innocent victim didn't take too kindly to having the snot scared out of him by a man in a clown suit. So after a brief verbal exchange, pulled out a handgun and knocked Muhammad in the head. Physically, Muhammad's okay, but they say he's done clowning around. So I'd say he's probably very damn fortunate that somebody with a gun didn't shoot him. Hitting people upside the head with a gun is probably not the wisest thing, depending on what the people's intent is, what kind of weapon they may have. You know, it could be a little bit on the risky side to do something like that. Anyway, worked all right for this guy, though.
There's a fool Tulsa. I hope that it's shining on you. The nights are getting cold in Cherokee County. There's a blue northern passing through. I remember green eyes and a rancher's daughter, but remember is all that I do. Losing you left a pretty good cowboy with nothing to hold on to. Sundown came and I drove to town and drank a drink or two. You're the reason God made Oklahoma. You're the reason God made Oklahoma. I'm sure missing.
Goodbye. I'm a Libyan on a jet plane.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
All right, we're back. You know, we've got a lot of the handgun part of our training is doing okay, but it seems like we're getting a lot more requests right now, and I'm not sure if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it seems like the disaster preparedness stuff is going a little better for the first time ever. It's always done, you know, we've held our own with it. Radio Doc and a bunch of those folks in Farmington were at the very first one of those that we held. It was a monumental success. And, that was held at, where was that? I don't even remember. Yeah, it was at the, what the heck do they call that, Tebow, up there where we had that big deal at the time. We had one at the Tota Theater that was pretty good. We had another one. I don't know if it's a community center or something. I forgot what they call it. But and then they kind of just tapered off a little bit, and everything went back to handguns. Now it seems to be turning around, and people are finally waking up and starting to get into this disaster preparedness stuff a little more. But the Civic Center, thanks, Snowman. That's exactly what it was. And I think some of it is at the expense or the sacrifice of other types of training. They need to kind of share the love a little bit and get some of their weapons training as well. And you know, the guy that was on with us Friday night, one of the students from the class, this last weekend, he really understood what was going on there. He said, you know, this is it's a lot of money to pay. I really didn't know what to expect, but the fact of the matter is, he says, I know nothing about what we're doing here and how to, you know, what this is all about. And I just felt like I had to try it. And before he got done, way before he got done, actually by the end of the first day, he was just ranting and raving about, wow, I kept asking myself, what can we possibly do for three full days for that amount of money and be productive in it? And by the end of the first day, he was just, wow. He said, there's more. Cannot believe that we were doing all of this. I've never even heard or seen of some of the stuff that we're doing. I didn't know this even existed. And before it was over with, he'd really had a good time. He learned a lot. He was dedicated. And everybody else that was, I mean, everybody did this, but this one guy really stood out. He tried really hard and open-minded. Left everything that he'd ever heard, learned previously, left it at the door and said, okay, here I am. Teach me. And it worked out well. I wish all of our students were as open-minded and willing to allow themselves to be taught the way that this guy did. But everybody had a great time. Everybody learned. It's just that some of the things that this guy said really stuck out. All right, let's get back to our crystal ball here and see what's going on. There's more stuff going on in California, unfortunately. Surprise, surprise. There's a ballot initiative there that's going to try to go a step further on the bullet background check. They're trying to go farther than the law that was already passed in May. He said some of the major points in this, they call it bullet points, already been voted on by California lawmakers and signed by the governor. The law is set to take effect in January of 2019, but Proposition 63 adds even more red tape to this, and it's the bullet background check. California Lieutenant Governor developed this initiative. He's running for governor in California in 2018. He said, "I'm fighting to pass Proposition 63 because it will, without question, reduce gun violence. Without question, reduce gun violence and save lives. This proposition, this bullet background check, will, without question." I have questions about it already. Without question, reduce gun violence and save lives. But the law and this Proposition 63 would see bullet background checks carried out in very different ways. The legislation would make Californians provide an ID card and have an immediate background check when trying to buy ammunition. The check would happen in a database of people who cannot own guns. Proposition 63 would make Californians get a 4-year permit from the state's Department of Justice. They'd run a background check and have 30 days to approve the permit. Those applying would have to pay $50. Boy, this is getting stupid out there. Have to pay $50 and provide identifying information, including a fingerprint. That information would go into a new database. Then people would have to show the permit each time they went to buy ammunition. If they pass this initiative, it'll take effect on January 1st, 2018. It would, without question, reduce gun violence and save lives. NRA, of course, urging Californians to vote against it. Proposition 63 is a very bad proposal. Yeah, we get that. There's an Olympic shooter here for the NRA. He said it's a trap and skeet shooter, 6-time Olympic medal winner. Only bureaucrats would believe that criminals and terrorists would jump through these hoops to buy ammunition. So for those of you that live in California, there, mountain shooter. You need to get your state squared away there, buddy. You're going to have to, you need to take the whole bull by the horns here and try to lead these people around and make them get their poop in a group. You know, this, back to this election deal. We're only, eight or nine days away now. It's pretty scary. It is pretty damn scary. And another one, they say there's a former Clinton Foundation CEO now has, apparently, according to the PM Nightly News, has fled the country and has asked Putin for asylum. Yeah. Now we're seeing there, Eric Braverman, apparently he's fled the country fearing for his life and sought asylum in Russia. Currently we cannot verify these reports, but we'll check and see if we hear any more on that. I don't want to read the whole story here yet, just until we confirm that. But I find it interesting. How many people have died apparently crossed Hillary in some manner? Unbelievable. There's, I've wondered about, and I couldn't find anything on it. Doesn't appear to be a law that specifically covers what would happen if a presidential candidate died in the middle of the election process here. And I thought about this when I see all the problems that Hillary's having, all the stuff she's going through. And I said, well, what would happen if she just kicked the bucket one day? Will they try to take her her stunt double in and go ahead and run her anyway and keep her out of sight and out of mind for a while or what? And I couldn't find, there were some interesting things about vice presidents and whatnot here and fill in the vacancy from the nomination to the Electoral College vote. But there wasn't anything specifically about a president if they, or a presidential candidate, if they were to bite the big one here before an election. I thought that was kind of interesting there. Let's see. I'm not going to do that one on account of I don't like it. Since I'm the one pulling all the strings here, well, that's just the way it's going to be. In Baltimore, they are encouraging kids there. There's some kids showed up at St. Francis Academy Community Center this last, let's see, 10:30, yeah, a week ago Saturday. No, not even a week ago Saturday. This last Saturday, day before yesterday. Showed up at St. Francis Academy Community Center to swap their toy guns for peaceful prizes. You know what? Even before I became what I am with the attitude that I have now, before I got into this whole political damn crap that we mess with all the time, you know what I'd have told them when I was 8 years old, if they'd have said, you know, come turn your gun in for a non-violent violent toy? I would have told them something that would have absolutely guaranteed me to get my mouth washed out with soap. There's no doubt about it. When I was but a wee lad, I had the same feelings for my toy guns at that time that I do for my real guns now. And if somebody would have touched one of them, I'm afraid that I would have gone off the deep end. This is nothing new that I started doing here. I've been this way my whole life. I've got pictures. Matter of fact, I'm going to scan one of those pictures. I've got pictures of me when I was probably 2, 3. Sitting on a horse with a cowboy hat on, and I still clearly remember those guns that I had. They were pearl handled. Of course, back then there wasn't too many. Well, it wasn't real pearl handled. Hell no, it wasn't. What do you think? Crazy. It was white plastic grips, but the gun itself, of course, was a pewter type stuff. It was metal. It was like heavy, like a gun. And it was a cap gun. And it was always loaded. I didn't carry that gun, but what, it didn't have a roll of caps in it. When I was 2 years old, 3 years old, I did not see the point in carrying an unloaded cap gun. And nothing has changed in 57 years. I still don't see any point in carrying an unloaded cap gun. Or any other gun, as far as that matters. Mountain Shooter had a toy M14 1964. Yeah, boy, I tell you what, when I was a kid, I was my very favorite toys were something to do with guns. I once had a, and I mentioned this the other night during Amy's show when she did this day in history thing. It had to do with the Man from U.N.C.L.E. I had a Man from U.N.C.L.E. briefcase. And the Man from U.N.C.L.E. briefcase had a, you open it up and it had a little Uzi type gun in there that locked in place under the handle there, and the barrel lined up with a hole in the edge of the briefcase. So I could open the briefcase and pull the Uzi out and shoot it. It was a cap gun too. Or I could push a button on, I don't know if it was push a button or pull a trigger on the handle or something on the briefcase while it was closed and shoot through the hole in the briefcase. It had handcuffs in it. It had a grenade looking thing in there that when you throw it and it hits it, and it was a cap deal too. You throw it, it was weighted on one end, it'd land on the heavy end, and the cap would go off. I've just always had stuff like that. Boy toys. So, anyway, there's a, these kids are, they're being encouraged to turn in their fake weapons and get them replaced with basketballs and stuffed animals and art supplies. Are you freaking kidding me? Really? Water guns, replica guns, and BB guns were then painted and used in the background of a mobile mosaic made by the nonprofit organization Mosaic Makers. What an authentic, I mean, what a clever name there. The completed art project will be displayed in honor of Tamir Rice, 12-year-old Cleveland boy fatally shot by police while playing with a toy gun 2 years ago. I think I remember that. I think we did a story on that. The event coordinator emphasized that plastic weapons as a child serve as a gateway to real guns as an adult. So plastic guns are gateway guns. Well, I can live with that. I think that's okay. Because my plastic guns pretty much led to real guns as an adult. And I'm perfectly okay with that. The replica guns are what's dangerous. It's what the event coordinator, Ralph Moore. Moore told the Baltimore Suns that the replica guns are what's dangerous. He added that toy guns today remind of toy cigarettes that were a popular item when he was a child. It was orienting kids to smoking. I think toy guns in many ways are doing the same thing. You know what? I had toy, them little candy cigarettes, and I don't think it had the least damn impact whatsoever on whether I smoked or didn't smoke. They were candy, you know, and as a kid, maybe I was distinctly different and vastly more intelligent than the average kid, but I could tell that those were candy cigarettes. And I don't think that it popularized or had a damn nothing to do with me starting smoking. Because the candy cigarettes went away by the time I was probably six or 7 years old. I probably never had candy cigarettes anymore. And I didn't start smoking until I was about 18, whatever. So, if that was the case, why wasn't there some type of intermittent, whether it was sneaking a cigarette, whether it was a candy cigarette, was it something? It just went away. And anyway, I don't believe it. Let's see here. Let me catch up on the... Good for you, Susie B. I am proud of you. She said she still has boxes of toy cigarettes in her cupboard right now today and still haven't smoked a single cigarette at 35 years old. Bless your heart. I wish I could have said that. You know what? But I quit a long time ago, and I feel good about it. I don't have a... Once in a while, I get real pissed, and I have a desire, for a cigarette, but it goes away pretty quick. But, I feel a whole lot better. I can think back now how I used to feel when I smoked, and I thought, what a retard. That is so stupid. And I wish that I would have done it so much. I wish I had never started. It's just so dumb. But, I did quit long enough ago now that I think that I have extended hopefully my life at least a little bit. I've been quit now completely for14 years, I guess it was. It was good for you, Snowman. Glad to hear it. I think it was 14 years ago. I believe it was 2002. Late 2002, I believe. And this is too late 2016. So I'm pretty sure it'd be... Yeah, I'm sure it was 2002. So it's been 13 or 14 years, anyway. So, anyway. And Susie B, I never asked you. I was never around you long enough to know. I didn't realize that, but I'm proud of you. Really am. Glad you have done that. Okay, let's see here. Let me get my get all my stuff together here, and we'll continue to march.
Since you've gone, the moon, the sun, the stars in the sky, no. Love divine once was mine. Now you've gone. Since you've gone, my heart, my lips, my tear dim dies. A lonely soul within me cries.
Love's gonna live here.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
Yo, Yakima Glock, I don't think I can agree with you there when you say it's hard to pretend you're not getting old once you pass 39. I'm 60. And I'm still having a really hard time accepting that fact. I still get around pretty good, and I just won't probably ever break down and say, except maybe in jest, and say, "Wow, I really am old. I really am getting old," because it doesn't. It never crosses my mind. I never think about it. I go out. I notice that my knees don't work as good as they used to. But other than that, I just never think about it. I still go out and do things and play with the boys out there when they go out in the woods and just don't have any problem at all. And I hope that continues. I'm not prepared to. You know, I've heard that, the Tinker. I heard people tell me that when I was, they said when I got to 45, I'd do that. And the guy I was talking to was older than that. He didn't know I was already 45 when he told me. And so I don't know. I'm just not prepared to give up yet. Susie B, I've heard of a lot of people do that. They work and do everything right up until they're very, very old, and then when they quit, they have nothing left to keep them to give. They got no reason to keep going, and they just tip over one day. And they say, "Okay, well, I guess I'm done. Alrighty then." All right, we got a girl out trick-or-treating here, so I'm going to keep track of her and make sure she makes it home in a reasonable hour here. All right, let's see if we can go on down the list. I may have to get this one. Let's see here. No, I'll save that one for a little bit. You know, they say that... And I don't know if it's true. It's come around two or three times, but they say Donald Trump has picked Trey Gowdy for his, what is it, Attorney General or something? I think it's, is it Attorney General? Anyway, whatever it is, I hope he accepts. I hope that, and I still am not 100% convinced that that Trump's going to get in there. I think he can. I think the vote is there without any problem whatsoever. But I'm just afraid that that it's just already been decided. I'm just afraid that it's already done. And, you know, it just doesn't matter. Well, hey, yeah, come on, Glock, speak for yourself. I'm a spring chicken, I think. Well, I think my spring probably already sprung, but anyway, whatever. Susie B, you seem to be having all the trouble tonight. You can bite your cigarette in half. All right. Let's see here. Got people looking for guns and all kinds of stuff. Still kind of hanging by a thread here, whether I ought to go out and get my FFL again. There's a woman here, and I hate it for her that she had to do this, but I'm glad that she, you know, we see people stand around while things are going on, while violent attacks are happening. They either laugh and cheer them on, they're taking pictures and videos, or they turn and walk away. And this has happened time and time and time again. And I guess I shouldn't have said that so loud, because Google heard me and now is searching for something that I said. How stupid is that? But anyway, there's a lady in South Carolina that is not going to face any charges for shooting her own son, who was attacking his wife with a hammer here about a week ago. They said that this lady continually feared that her son, who was recently released from a federal prison, and said the day before the shooting, the kid told his mother in kind of gruesome detail how he was going to use a hammer to kill his estranged wife, who is also the mother of his four children. Now, this guy's got a problem. Sound like he deserved everything he got. This is one of those happy ending stories here. Jones said he would then go to his mother's home and burn it down. She was afraid that her son would do exactly what he said, went to the woman's, the estranged wife workplace to let her know what the guy said. The next day, the guy asked his mother for a hammer, but knowing what his plans are, she refused to give him one. However, the husband, unaware of the threats previously made by him, retrieved a hammer for him. Unbelievable. So, a little difference on the details there, but at some point, the woman, the estranged wife who lives on the same street, was sitting in her parked car outside when the guy came up to the vehicle and began hitting her on the head with a hammer. The mother witnessed all this and went and grabbed her gun. However, as the mother approached Jones, the guy with the hammer, he turned and charged at her. At that point, she fired multiple shots, struck him in the abdomen. When authorities arrived on the scene, Joan was transported to the hospital. The estranged wife also received medical treatment for her injuries she got during the attack. No charges filed against the mother. Jones is facing attempted murder charges. Evidently, he's going to live. So we need to work on the mother's marksmanship a little bit. Apparently it didn't do the job. There's so many see what's going on in the chat room here. There's so much crap going around on Facebook here. You never know what is true and what's not. There's a number of things about, all armed Americans are going to be, hunted down and are going to be detained in FEMA camps and all this stuff. And there was another one just came out, and this one was updated 2 months ago that says just that, all armed Americans will be detained in FEMA camps starting in 2017. And even if they ever had plans for that, well, they might. But I don't believe that those kind of plans and that kind of intel is ever going to get out. No one's ever going to have an advance warning for us if something like this were to happen. So I think what they have taken some information here and tried to and just put together a video with all this stuff, just like Alex Jones and so many of the rest of them do. And I don't believe it for a minute. There's so many things, it's so hard to sort it all out. My sister is trying to get me to start a website that debunks things like this. But, there's other sites out there for that. I spend enough time trying to do it on Facebook to keep everybody from going off the deep end there in starting or perpetuating these rumors as they pop up here. And there was something, let me see if I can find this. It's not a rumor, and it's not gun related. And if I can find it here real quick, I want you to listen to, I was really proud of Newt Gingrich. And I don't know if I want to waste the time on both of these or not. Maybe I'll do one tonight and one tomorrow. But Mike Huckabee and Newt Gingrich both really shot down Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly, I am so disappointed in Megyn Kelly.
Carl, thank you.
And the stance that she has taken and tried to attack everybody from Trump to, you know, all the good guys. She's changed a lot since she started her own show here. But it's less than 7 minutes long. I want you to hear Mike Huckabee really, really put her in her place.
Our next guest is a Team Trump insider who had to say on Sunday, if the GOP loses the Senate, it's not because candidates ran with Donald Trump, but because they ran from him. No time for wimps and wusses. Joining me now, Fox News contributor and former presidential candidate, not a wimp, nor a wuss, Governor Mike Huckabee. Great to see you, Gov. So let's just start with someone, wimp, wuss, or something else. Jason Chaffetz, who, after that Access Hollywood tape broke, came out and said, I'm done, and withdrew his endorsement of Donald Trump. And yet, tonight, he tweeted out, I will not defend or endorse Donald Trump, but I am voting for him. Hillary Clinton is that bad.
Well, she is that bad. I mean, what we've learned
and
what
even
your
earlier
guest talked about.
What is he? Is he a wimp? Is he a wuss? What is he? So he's withdrawing the endorsement.
He's beginning to gain a little spine. The fact that he's at least going to vote right. Look, any Republican, anybody who understands how corrupt the Clintons are, who gets it, that she is surrounded by people who have never told her no. She sets up a private email server. She lies to Congress. She destroys evidence that's under subpoena. She treats foreign governments like they're a piggy bank for the Clinton Foundation to make her family rich. She violates the law whenever she wants to. She knows she's not going to get caught. She uses the government agencies like the FBI and the IRS like their own personal toys to go after political opponents. Good gosh, Megan, is there any Republican who has breath left who could stand back and let that happen without doing everything they can to stop it? And the only roadblock in the way to that level of corruption that would forever taint our government is Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Like him or not, he's the shot we've got, and we'd better get behind him with energy.
Well, that's the question, you know, is do they like him better than they like her? They don't seem to like either one of them.
They better.
You know,
they better.
But let me ask you whether you think Trump is doing what he ought to be doing in these last 13 days. He came under some fire today for being at the opening of the old post office, a building, you know, he's put a lot of money into and a lot of work into. And he was like, hey, I deserve a day to go. But he came under significant criticism for wasting half a day in, we only have 13 days left. Do you agree?
You know, it's nonsense. If Donald Trump had gone into some type of cathedral to pray, laid on his face and prayed out loud to God for 2 hours, the people would have said he was wasting his time because God wouldn't hear him. Look, these people who are criticizing him for opening his hotel are nonsense. Let me tell you what that hotel represents. It's about the only thing in Washington, D.C. that actually works. It's one of the few things that was ever brought in under budget and on time. Nothing else in that town works. If nothing else, it's a great way for Donald Trump to say, just like I built this hotel, that's how I'm going to lead this country because I know how things are supposed to work.
We need somebody
who will be that champion.
There was a remarkable exchange outside of the event involving, just to want to explain this, so there was an anti-Trump protester who took on the daughter of a U.S. veteran over the U.S. flag. Watch this.
My father fought for this country in the army. This is a disgrace.
It's right. You want to know why? F that flag.
I'm standing up here.
American.
Thoughts on that?
You know, it just stuns me that somebody who grew up in this country could believe that we are what that latte-sipping idiot must have been thinking when she said that.
Tell us how you really feel.
Gosh, Megan. Look, I'm a person who has grown up living the American dream. I worked my butt off to get through college. Nobody in my family, no male upstream for me, had ever graduated high school. I love this country because I understand that I'm living on one of the few places on God's given planet in which a person like me, growing up like I did, could live the life I've been able to live. But I didn't live it by going and screaming and burning the flag. I did it by respecting this country and especially appreciating the men and women who shed their blood so I could live with liberty, freedom, and opportunity, and take advantage of it. My gosh, what's happened to this country? What are we teaching these people if they don't have at least a modicum of appreciation for what these veterans have done to make us free? God help us if there are many people who think like that idiot.
So you're going to put you down in not a fan category for the sentiment she was expressing. And before I let you go, can I just ask you one more? So much emotion, right? She felt it. Deeply.
Sure.
And we've seen that. We see that in the country right now. You know, left versus right, blue versus red, Hillary versus Trump, and the supporters on both sides. It always gets especially bad right before the elections. 2012, the same. 2008, the same. Do you feel it too? And do you think there, whoever wins, there will be a healing? Or is this especially divisive this year?
It is especially divisive, but the healing comes if we have a leader who will start fixing things and start bringing equality back. Why I worry about Hillary is not about her being a Democrat. Look, I've known Hillary a long time. I know exactly how this election is coming to the end because I've seen it, I've lived it, I've experienced it, and that's what scares me. Here's what I want. Whether it's Trump, and I hope to God it is, but the fact is I believe Donald Trump understands the people out there in America who swing hammers, stand on concrete floors, deliver four plates up and down their arm to a table of diners. I think Donald Trump has at least an appreciation for the people who do the work that often is neglected. Mm-hmm. I don't think Hillary could give a rip about the people who are out there lifting heavy things and getting their hands dirty and greasy. She looks at them as the great unwashed, people unworthy of her, other than to be put in her basket of deplorables. That's my prayer. That's not about partisanship. It's about making America America again. And as Trump might say, to make it great again.
Governor, great to see you.
Thanks, Megan.
Well, in the middle of the Obamacare debate, we heard warnings.
I think that was pretty good. You know, while we're on the subject here, just so I don't have to do this again, I'm going to go ahead and play the other one because it got even worse when hang on a minute. I got to take care of something here. I'm going to go ahead and start this, and I'll talk about it.
He's a Trump supporter and author of the book Treason. Great to see you, Mr. Speaker. Thanks for being here. So
it's good to be back.
I mean, with Cook and many other nonpartisan independent pollsters now saying that the Senate is likely lost to the Republicans, what does that say? I mean, if Donald Trump loses this White House race and the Republicans lose the Senate, does that suggest that the Republicans nominated the wrong candidate at the top of their ticket?
The next 2 weeks are a contest of two parallel universes. I just listened to that report. First of all, I used to hang out with Charlie Cook when he would explain that Donald Trump was hopeless and would not get the nomination. I like Charlie. That doesn't mean he's infallible. But let's take the report we just got. Republicans are actually outvoting Democrats in Florida. They're outvoting Democrats in Pennsylvania. That's unpreciedented. They've cut the Democratic lead.
You predict a win in Pennsylvania?
I think they might.
Really? You think Trump's going to win Pennsylvania?
Look, all I can report to you right now is they're outvoting the Democrats in early voting, which is also true in Florida, which is unprecedented.
But all of the polls in Pennsylvania have her winning.
What?
All of the polls in Pennsylvania have her ahead.
I know. I just told you we have two alternative universes right now. In Iowa, for example, the Democrats are 50,000 votes behind where they were with Barack Obama in turnout. The governor is very confident we're going to carry Iowa, which Obama carried last time. I could just carry you through case after case like this. In Minnesota, we're almost certainly going to win the congressional seat up around Duluth, which is a very Democratic area, but it deeply dislikes Hillary Clinton. And represent now.
But let me just ask you. Let me just ask you, because you say it's two alternate universes. I mean, these are sort of small examples of how he might be heading early voting and so on. But I'm telling you that the Fox News decision desk just moved Iowa, that you just mentioned, Indiana, second congressional district in Maine. All of them moved left, moved more likely to vote for Hillary Clinton. And in fact, all of the moves that have been on this map over the past 3 weeks by Larry Sabato, by Cook, by the Fox News decision desks, these are nonpartisan outlets that are just trying to call the electoral scoreboard.
They're not nonpartisan
scoreboard.
Outlets. Every outlet you describe is part of the establishment.
Fox News, really? Are we? I don't think so. And every state they've moved it to the left, towards Hillary. And you tell me whether that's all made up.
No, I think they're two alternative universes. You have a poll which suggests that she's going to get a Barack Obama turnout among African Americans. I don't think that's going to happen. You have a Washington Post ABC News poll where they took out 8% of the vote because they didn't like the way it voted. Look, I've been around long enough. I remember when the Detroit Liberal newspaper on the Sunday before the election said John Engler would lose by 14 points. He won the governorship that year. Mm-hmm. I don't take polls as seriously as people who've never run for office.
But your candidate loves them and has touted them from the beginning. And he's been behind in virtually every one out of the last 40 polls that we've seen over the past month. That's the reality.
Look, if you want to assume the election's over, skip the next 2 weeks and we can talk about the future.
I'm not assuming anything. I'm asking you whether you believe your candidate's behind based on these numbers and what it says about the down ballot races.
I believe the odds are at least 1 in 3 and maybe better than that. That the difference in intensity and the difference in determination and the degree to which Hillary Clinton is clearly the most corrupt, dishonest person ever nominated by a party all mean that the odds are pretty good she's not going to win. Mm-hmm. Now, I actually believe that. This is not just because I'm for Donald Trump. I actually believe the American people
are sickened by this. So she, let's assume she is corrupt, right? She was as corrupt 3 weeks ago and 3 months ago, and she would have been corrupt and collapsing physically on September 11th of this year, and her poll numbers tanked. But then you know what happened. He had a rough first debate. He took the bait on Alicia Machado. He stayed in that trap for a week. The Access Hollywood tape came out, which was not produced by Hillary Clinton. That was Trump on camera talking about grabbing women.
Look, I just heard you go through this with Governor Pence. I get it. I know where you're coming from. But let me point out something to you.
Sure.
The three major networks spent 23 minutes attacking Donald Trump that night and 57 seconds on Hillary Clinton's secret speeches. You don't think this is a scale of bias worthy of Pravda and Izvestia? I mean, you want to know why Donald Trump's had a rough time?
If Trump is a sexual predator, that is...
He's not a sexual predator.
Okay,
you
that's
can't
your
say
opinion.
That.
I'm
you
not taking
not
a position on
that
it.
You defend that statement.
I'm not
sick
taking
and tired of people like you using language that's inflammatory that's not true.
Excuse me, Mr.
Donald,
Speaker.
Donald Trump has no idea whether
it's true or not. What we know is that
Neither do you.
That's right, and I'm not taking a position on it,
unlike
you.
Yes, you are. When you use the words, you took a position.
So what
I think
I said
it's very
is
unfair of you to do that, Megan.
Incorrect.
I think that is exactly the bias people are upset by.
I think that your defensiveness on this may speak volumes, sir.
No,
what I said
let me just
is
suggest
if,
to you.
No. Let me make my point, and then I'll give you the floor. What I said is if Trump is a sexual predator, then it's a big story. And what we saw on that tape was Trump himself saying that he likes to grab women by the genitals and kiss them against their will. That's what we saw. Then we saw 10 women come forward after he denied actually doing it at a debate to say that was untrue. He did it to me. He did it to me. We saw reporters. We saw people who had worked with him, people from Apprentice and so on and so forth. He denies it all, which is his right. We don't know what the truth is. My point to you is, as a media story, we don't get to say the 10 women are lying. We have to cover that story, sir.
Sure. Okay, so it's worth 23 minutes of the three networks to cover that story. And Hillary Clinton in a secret speech in Brazil to a bank that pays her $225,000, saying her dream is an open border where 600 million people could come to America. That's not worth covering.
That is worth
covering.
When
you want to go back through the tapes of your show recently, you are fascinated with sex and you don't care about public policy.
Me?
Now, that's
really
what I get out of watching you tonight.
You know what? Mr. Speaker, I'm not fascinated by sex, but I am fascinated by the protection of women and understanding what we're getting in the Oval Office. And I think the American voters would like
and
to know.
And therefore, we're
going to
send Bill Clinton back to the East Wing because, after all, you are worried about sexual predators.
Yeah, listen, it's not about me. It's about the women and men of America. And poll numbers show us that the women of America in particular are very concerned about these allegations and in large part believe that they are a real issue. And
do you want to
Do
you want to comment on whether the Clinton ticket has a relationship to a sexual predator?
We on the Kelly file have covered that story as well, sir. I will tell you the
polls. No, I just want to hear you use the words. I want to hear your words. Bill Clinton, sexual predator. I dare you. Say Bill Clinton, sexual predator.
Mr. Speaker,
disbarred by the Arkansas bar. Disbarred by the Arkansas bar. $850,000 penalty.
Excuse me, sir. We on the Kelly file have covered the Clinton matter as well. We've hosted Kathleen Willey. We've covered the examples of him being accused as well, but he's not on the ticket. And the polls also show that
the
American public is less interested in the deeds of Hillary Clinton's husband than they are in the deeds of the man who asks us to make him president, Donald Trump. We're going to have to leave it at that, and you can take your anger issues and spend some time working on them, Mr. Speaker. Thanks for being
and
here.
And you too.
Here she is, who I believe is the hottest newscaster.
All right. I thought that was awesome. Everybody's telling me to turn it off. I wasn't going to turn it off. I like the way Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich was there was a while there that I wasn't sure that I liked him, but he's been pretty good. I like what he's got to say here, at least lately. But I also had to take a phone call while all this was going on. So anyway, got that done. But I'm very, very disappointed in Megyn Kelly and Fox News in general here lately. And over this whole election thing. And it does speak volumes of her character, Susie B. It sure does. And I don't know what else to say about her. I've loved Megyn Kelly for years, but over this last probably the last year, I've been fighting it because I just didn't want to believe the things I was seeing. But after these last two interviews here that I played tonight, I tell you what, I am forevermore, unless she comes begging on bended knee for forgiveness and has vowed to change her opinions and her ways and what she says, then I am forevermore she's not going to be my friend. And that's a sad, sad truth there. But anyway, I had to drag the election into, and it's going to be that way, you know, for the next, this is the hottest thing that this country has seen for a lot of years with this election coming up. It's worse now than it was when, Bill and Monica were hanging out together. It's worse now than when Nixon did his very minor little thing there, but everything that's happening here is vastly more dramatic or more press given to it or whatever you want to call it than probably all of those things put together, and it's going to climax on the 8th. And we're going to find out just how knowledge it is more worser. Yakima Glock, it damn sure is more worser. That's the term I was looking for right there. Thank you. We'll find out on the 8th just what happened and how bad it's going to be, but I predict that somewhere between the 8th and Inauguration Day, that there may be yet another very significant incident. So we'll find out. doesn't look real rosy right now, but we'll find out anyway. So, I will be back unless something dramatic happens. I will be back Wednesday. Sometime by this coming Friday, I will have the new schedule as to what I plan to do after after the time changes. Time will change next week. So Monday, a week from today, a new schedule will be happening in some way. I am not going to change anybody else. You guys are used to where everybody's at, and I'm not going to change any of that. So, but Amy's show, we're trying to figure out whether she wants to continue at all. I think she does, but it's just so hard for her right now. I thought going down to one day a week would do it, and it probably would. We just picked the wrong day. She has so much stuff going on that it Mondays just kills her, and it's as you've noticed, she's missed several days on Mondays because of that. So we're going to figure out if we can put her in Friday or what we're going to do. But after I talk to Amy and talk to the Tinker, then we'll let you know just exactly what we plan to do here. But it will be changing, for better or worse, on Monday, a week from tonight. So there you have it. So good night, and we will see you guys Wednesday. Thanks for joining me. And thanks for joining me.
Well, that wraps up another edition of The Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for The Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me.
No explanation, no reconciliation. No, let's talk it over. Number I can call. Goodbye says it all. Says it all.